Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Sam Sokol is a Times of Israel political correspondent. He has been covering the war against Hamas since the horrendous events on October the 7th. He has been both on the ground and in the Knesset and has reported on the economic, security, social and political ramifications on the war, as well as the enlistment of the ultra-Orthodox. I'm delighted to have him as my guest now to tell me what it has been like. Sam, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sam, it can't have been easy being a journalist over the last 10 or so months in Israel. What has it been like?
It's been very difficult. The year prior to October 7th, really security issues and the idea of security threats had sort of gone to the back of everybody's mind. It had sort of withdrawn from the public consciousness. We were all very much focused on the government's planned judicial overhaul, which had really sort of riven Israeli society, driven deep cleavages between two different warring camps in Israel. And the main concern a lot of people had was social cohesion, our future as a democracy. And there had been sort of a widely held conception that the conflict against Hamas in Gaza was contained, that every few years they'd lob some rockets. We would have some sort of mission, either airstrikes or a limited ground incursion, and then things would go back to normal, but that they couldn't get over the border. So when October 7th happened, it wasn't only an attack against our bodies, against our people, killing and kidnapping and raping, but it was also a huge psychic blow to Israeli society. It was totally unexpected, and it undermined so many of our core beliefs about, you know, where we were and what was happening. Personally, on October 7th, I was in the hospital. A couple of days earlier, I had had a massive asthma attack, and I was in the morning of October 7th, I was in bed in Hadassah Ein Kerem Hospital in Jerusalem on oxygen. And I remember waking up and hearing the man in the next bed listening to the news on his phone, and it was talking about some sort of Hamas attack or incursion in southern Israel. And nobody really understood at first what was going on or what the scope was. And as the course of the day, you know, over the course of the day, we started to get this image of what was happening and grow more and more horrified. And during that entire period as well, we started getting Hamas rocket attacks. Now, imagine being on oxygen, having trouble even sitting up or standing, and suddenly, multiple times, repeatedly, you have to run, get up, pull off the mask, run for shelter. It was just an absolute nightmare. Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew if their friends or relatives down south were okay. And at the time, I was still working at the English edition of Haaretz, and my boss, Amir Tibon, lived right on the Gaza border. I didn't know if he was alive or dead. I didn't know if other people I knew down there had survived or what was going on. Amir's story was actually incredible because his father, who was a retired IDF general, when he heard what was going on, grabbed a gun and his car keys, drove down south, gathered some soldiers and went door to door killing terrorists until he actually rescued Amir and his wife and children. But so many people didn't come out of it. And, you know, right after October 7th, it was this idea that everything that had gone before was suddenly irrelevant. We were in a totally new reality. And for the first few months of the war, there was a certain amount of national unity. There was this national catchphrase, "Biyachad ninatzeach," together we will win. And there was a certain amount of unity. You had people, pro-Netanyahu people, working together with former members of the anti-government protest movement to bring supplies to the soldiers, to help the people who had been displaced. But as the months passed, sort of our political divisions started to reemerge. Arguments over over how the government was handling the war, arguments over ultra-Orthodox enlistment, this is, you know, for decades, since the beginning of the state, yeshiva students have had deferments and exemptions from army service. And this has been sort of a festering wound in Israel for decades. But things really came to a head during the war because you had secular and traditional and national religious Israelis fighting and dying. And this huge resentment against the ultra-Orthodox for not serving. And the ultra-Orthodox play a very important and a key role in Netanyahu's coalition. So Netanyahu was doing everything he could to try to sort of make sure that they didn't have to go in. And what ended up happening is finally, after decades of back and forth, the Supreme Court came up and said, no, these people have to serve. They have to be called up. And we're now seeing the beginning of efforts to recruit them. And it's still a political mess where Netanyahu is increasingly unpopular. He started to rebound a little in recent polls, but he's become very unpopular, including among many on the right. And there's a real desire among many people for change. So we're starting to see that social cohesion break down again. And there's two things happening in Israel at the same time. One is the tension from the war, from what's Iran going to do, or is there going to be an escalation in the north? And at the same time, there's this sort of surface level life continuing, at least, you know, not for the tens of thousands displaced from the north, not from the people who haven't been able to return home in the south yet, but for a lot of Israelis, life is sort of a mix between tension and day-to-day life just going on. So you could go to a sidewalk cafe, you're going to get a cappuccino, you'll hang out with friends. There might be, you know, there might be a siren or an air raid alert, and then you go back to doing what you're doing. People are going to the movies, people are taking vacations. When Iran recently threatened to attack us again, I remember canceling plans that I had with my family, not out of fear, but out of this sort of feeling like if something's going to happen, I'd rather be at home. And, you know, just sort of being pragmatic. But many people I know basically said, to hell with them. We're not letting them change our plans. So, you know, one day you're at a funeral, the next day you're at the movies. It's sort of a whiplash. It's cognitive dissonance.
It must be absolutely awful. And I imagine you're constantly living on a knife's edge because you don't know what the next step is, especially with regard to Iran. And as a reporter, like, how do you wake up with dread every morning thinking what's going to happen next?
Well, you know, since I cover politics, I think I wake up every morning not with dread, but with sort of the feeling, you know, that just I have no idea what's going to happen because it's such a mercurial and unpredictable field that things can just change in a second from one extreme to another. Governments rise and fall, coalitions come together or not. You know, I remember on the Tisha B'Av fast, Itamar Ben-Gvir, the far-right minister of national security, goes up to the Temple Mount and says, my policy is now that Jews can pray on the Temple Mount, which is a violation of the official status quo. This is the third time in 3 months that he's done it. Netanyahu comes out and says, well, no, there's no change. It's like every time you turn around, there's a new argument, a new fight, a new new tension. Right now, everyone's sort of on the edge of their seats. It's one of those will there, won't they situations with a ceasefire slash hostage deal. Are we really agreeing to it? We don't know what's going, fully know what's going on between Blinken and Netanyahu. Even if we go on board 100%, will Hamas go on board? What happens next? Are we going to continue fighting? Are we going to have a ceasefire? If we have a ceasefire, will Hezbollah in Lebanon abide by it? And meaning they've said that they'll stop fighting us up there if we stop in Gaza. So, you know, it's just that feeling here that you just don't know what's going to happen. And you just try to live your best life as well as you can amidst that uncertainty.
It's heart-wrenching, actually. Please know, Sam, that you have a lot of support here in South Africa, a lot of friends, Jewish
Thank
and
you.
others, who really are praying for our brothers and sisters in Israel and watch the situation from a distance, but with as much passion as what you guys are going through there. So just thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for the insight. And I look forward to our next chat.
Me too. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.